What if your top salesperson was 1,000 times more efficient? And what if a limitless digital workforce helped your number one find leads? A super team working 24/7 on their behalf, thinking, acting, and solving complex tasks so more deals closed. What if with every sale, each customer felt like they were the only customer? That would be one very efficient sales leader. Now, imagine if every person on your team worked to the power of 1,000. They can with Agentforce, the powerful AI from Salesforce.
Not all meals are created equal. For instance, breakfast has the spicy egg McMuffin for a limited time, and lunch doesn't. McDonald's breakfast comes first. Ba-da-ba-ba-ba.
Hey there, it's JVL on The Secret Show with Sarah Longwell today. We talked about Stormy Daniels and her testimony in the Trump trial. We talked about Biden's pivot on Israel. We talked a little bit about Marco Rubio and a little bit about some T-ball. Gotta love T-ball talk. Here's the show. So yesterday, Stormy was cross-examined, and among the many things that the defense threw at her was, none of this actually happened, did it? And so this suggests to me that, again, the detail was necessary because part of the Trump team's defense is actually they never had sex. And so they had to explain it. But here's what I am fascinated by. The Trump's defense does not seem to be laying out an alternate theory of the case. Because, I would think, again, I'm not a lawyer, but it strikes me that most of the time the prosecution has a story that it's telling, and then the defense has a story it is telling. And they try to tell the best story they can come up with based upon the evidence to cast doubt on the prosecution's story. And what the Trump defense story seems to be, actually, he never had sex with Stormy. Okay, maybe he had sex with Stormy, but she wanted it because she was just a gold digger. She's the one who was going around asking for money, not Trump. Okay, so Trump paid her, but it wasn't a violation of anything. I mean, his defense seems to be what the stages of MAGA denialism are, right? His legal defense is like what the MAGAs did with January 6th, where they were like, this was, there was nothing. There were no riots. There was nothing there. Okay, well, those people were all Antifa undercovers. And so maybe there was some violence, but the other guys started it and the cops started. And then you're damn right. You're damn right they were, because those are great patriots who were there trying to take our country back.
And I'm going to pardon them all.
And this is kind of what his defense strategy is. He's just going to say all the different things. And I think that's indicative of what I'm talking too much. I'm sorry.
No, please.
But I'm giving you a little time to wake up.
Nice.
I think it is indicative of their strategy, which is they don't think they can be found not guilty. They don't think that a not guilty verdict is possible. And so they're playing for a hung jury. And so they think that by tossing out a whole bunch of conflicting and contradictory things, maybe one of those things will land with one of the jurors. They can get the hung jury and then claim total exoneration. And that's it. That's the strategy. And then the backup strategy is for Trump to lay the groundwork, as he has been doing, to claim that, like the Mueller report, this is all just a hoax from a corrupt judge and a Soros-funded DA, blah, 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 so that the guilty verdict... I mean, it seems to me like they are prepared for a guilty verdict.
Yeah.
Politically speaking. And
guilty?
Because he is, in fact, guilty of sin. Again, Stormy seems to, from all the accounts I have read, have been a fairly sympathetic witness, and in cross-examination have come out much better than Trump's lawyers did,
Will you talk about the cross a little bit? Because I'm just going to, just to defend my original position, which I maintain, that she was giving too many tawdry details that I think went beyond trying to establish the facts in the matter and were enough that they put the judge off. Right?
Yeah.
And so I, that's sort of my argument, is that the more she looks like she is trying to humiliate Trump with the details versus establish that it indeed happened. And she must have crossed that line. Like, I'm not in the courtroom, it's hard to know. But she must have crossed that line enough that both the judge said something about it, wanted it to stop, and then she got her lawyers, like, redirected her. Like, they took her out. And so that, to me, was the issue. I agree with you, though, that the... Well, and I just want to, on your point about, like, these are always... It's funny. It's like, the clearer we can see the strategies, the better they seem to be working. It's so strange. We can see them clearly. What is this? Is this also a part of flood the zone with shit, right?
Yeah.
It is the yeah. Just like, throw it all at them, flood the zone, and like, maybe they'll be so confused and so overwhelmed by the different various arguments. And you're right that like, one will land. It's sort of the way during the January 6th insurrection, Trump said, you fight like hell or you won't have a country anymore. You're never going to take this country back with weakness. Says a whole bunch of incendiary go attack things. And then throws in a peacefully somewhere in there.
Right.
And,
well, he said it.
Yeah. So anyway, but I'm interested in the cross because I was traveling. This is why I'm on the West Coast and have been doing stuff. So I didn't catch yesterday's news. So tell me about the cross-examination.
So she, by reports, was much more comfortable on the stand and grew increasingly comfortable and confident and was not evasive. So, for instance, at one point, the defense lawyer was like, yeah, you sold a lot of stuff, didn't you? Like, you know, Stormy Brand and blah, 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 you know. And she said, yeah, I did, just like Donald Trump does. Mm. Which is... You know, she wasn't evasive. She didn't try to hide with it. She didn't like, well, but she just sort of owned it and then also pointed out to everyone, like, this is the guy who sells Trump steaks and Trump water and Trump vodka. And another, they pulled up, I think it was a tweet of hers in which somebody called her, you know, like a toilet or something. And she, this is like fifth grade boys yelling at each other. Her response was something like, yeah, well, that means I'm just the one to flush the big orange turd or something. It's unbelievably stupid. And
we're not going to do video today, but the face I'm making is one of, I just, this
utter
stuff
disgust.
Is so, well, it's all gross.
It hey, is.
Sorry, because everybody, even if Stormy is like sympathetic and straightforward in this, like, there are no good guys in this particular story. This is what I never liked about the Michael Avenatti, Stormy Daniels lionizing. Like, these are not the great American heroes. Everybody in this story is, like, including Pecker. Like, the Pecker guys were all straightforward, too, right? They were all like, yes, we sell these stories, and we do this dirty work for celebrities, and you can pay us off, and we will commit campaign violations, and right, everybody's straightforward about how sort of gross they are. And so I just don't think anyone's a hero here. I just think the point is, get Trump for doing the illegal thing he did.
Yeah. It would be nice if one of these people was Atticus Finch.
Sure.
That would be nice, but that's not what we're getting in America. Anyway, her response to that, you know, the defense attorneys is like, you know, oh, and what were you referring to with this crass language? And Stormy's response was, oh, I was talking about Donald Trump. I was calling him a big orange turd. And I just, again, I'm not in the courtroom. I am hostage to reading the accounts because the transcripts aren't out yet. It just seems to me like she probably came across to jurors as somebody who is shooting straight. And I think that's ultimately damaging for Trump. I don't know. I just continue to feel there's a better than 50-50 chance he's going to be found guilty by this jury.
Oh, better than 50. I mean, I also think there's...
I don't mean like 90-10, but I mean like, you know, it's not exactly a coin flip. I think the smart money would probably be on a guilty verdict.
Yeah, totally. I agree with that. Yeah. I mean, it sounds like... And I do think it is interesting. Like, Stormy is not... Did we talk about this on The Next Level? Stormy is not their best witness. It's not like she is... She's kind of jammed in the middle here as, like, just establish that this thing happened and move on. And, in fact, I'm not even... I mean, I guess they'll get to the Cohen of it all soon. But I'm not even sure Cohen... It's like they're able to use all of these people. They're not relying on any one of them. It's like they do know that they've got a little bit of a rogues gallery here. And so they're telling the story very clearly and getting out of them what they want to establish the facts against Donald Trump, as opposed to relying on any of them as like a key witness or an explosive witness.
Yeah. Ben Wittes on Tim's show yesterday said that actually he thinks the most powerful witness so far, I think it was the comptroller, but it was just some person that nobody is not famous, who nobody understands, who is a loyal Trump employee, who is just very matter-of-factly laying out like the accounts receivable, accounts payable processes, which is very clearly demonstrate the illegality, right? So it's, and that's the stuff that I think, again, you can do a screen of bullshit when you're broadcasting at a country with 330 million people in it, 95% of whom are barely paying attention, and 5% of whom are only getting their news through Fox. And right, I mean, you can make that work, and you can dance around things in such a way that you can draw to an inside straight and win the Electoral College, even though you lost by 3 million votes or something. Like, yeah, you can do that. I just think it's harder to make the storm of shit work with 12 people who are sitting in a courtroom 8 hours a day, 3 days a week, seeing and hearing everything.
Yeah, so the difference, I think, between a courtroom...
Right, he doesn't have Fox. There is no version of Fox News with the jury that's going to help color people, that are, you know, take care of his base on the jury or something. Does that make sense?
It's that, but it's also they are constrained in a courtroom by the truth. Yeah. Right, so that is that's a big bummer for them. The other thing is, you know, it is just like the level at which people pay attention, right? Like Donald Trump and his team are able to do an awful lot with an electorate that is paying, you know, 10% of their time, 10% of their energy goes to paying attention to politics, and so they scan headlines and so they go off of, you know, in the courtroom. They're looking at the facts, right? They are being presented with them. Their job is to read everything. Like, this is one of the things about our politics that I think it's people struggle to understand, right? Because you hear people all the time, people on the left or even, you know, swing voters, they're like, how could anybody, when they know X, vote for Donald Trump? And I'm like, half the time, I'm like, oh, that person does not know X. Or if they know X, they listen to a bunch of media where people say X isn't true, or this other thing is worse, or whatever. But the idea that we are not all operating off of a same set of facts is just a constant now through our politics. And so I think when people are always shocked, they like assume everybody knows the exact same things they do, and has it filtered through whatever prism that they have it filtered through. And in a courtroom, everybody does have the same facts. And it is all filtered through the same prism, like the judges operate. And so that creates a real different environment for him.
Yeah. And it is why he keeps losing, right? It's why he lost all 61 of the lawsuits to overturn the election. It's why he lost the defamation suit. It's why he lost the corporate fraud suit. Like, it just shows that this is why the legal system has proven to be his kryptonite once you get to trials. Like, he's good at using the legal system to delay things and to exact arbitration and to, you know, to as a lever of negotiation when it's a thing that's just sort of looming out there. He's able to use the specter of the legal system. But when it comes to an actual trial, like that's a bad, the courtroom is a bad place for him.
Yeah.
And it's where a lot of his superpowers just get turned off. It's coming down. This is like a Bill Crystalism where you never know something he said about life in a presidential administration. You know, you spend all of your time focusing on XYZ, but then it turns out that it's actually Q, which was the most important thing you did, and you barely spent like 5 minutes thinking about it.
Mm-hmm.
I know I wrote this at the time, and I think you said it, were very dubious about the Alvin Bragg case and thought like, oh, geez, I mean, it's a shame this went first. This is going to help Trump. If he's found guilty and this is the only one of the cases that gets to verdict or even trial before the election, then America will have been much, much better off for having had this litigated.
Get everything for your next project at Menards and save big money. We carry everything to help you breathe easier. Allergen air filters help prevent seasonal allergy symptoms and improve your indoor air quality by capturing microparticles while allowing maximum airflow. Save big on Allergen air filters when you shop at Menards. View the weekly flyer and all of our great deals happening this week on Menards.com. Save big money at Menards.
Yeah, I mean, that's relative to the idea of, like, something getting litigated, right? Like, I would give anything. I mean, but if the Docs case or the January 6th case, like, those are the cases we need. Those are the cases that are extremely relevant to, that the American people needs to have that information going into the next election. Like, does Donald Trump actively mishandle classified information and use them for his own purposes and violate the law, because this is the guy you're going to give the nuclear codes to again. This is the guy you're going to give all the secure briefings to again. The guy who leaves all the stuff in his bathroom and tells people about it and refuses to follow the law, right? So like, and January 6th, obviously this guy, they're already prepping again to not accept the results of the election. He's got people like Tim Scott out there refusing to say that they will abide by the results of the election if he's the vice president, because the vice presidential audition requires saying you won't follow the votes and to say I don't know, it depends on whether or not it's fair. Okay, so like those two cases are extraordinarily important, and in fact I think there is part of me that is, even if he's found guilty, like that's good, that's something, but like it is nowhere near what is needed going into this second term for Americans to have the information on. And they will have done, like Trump will have won, to coin a phrase, he will have staged an enormous coup by not having any accountability on those. And those will just be gone. Like if Trump wins, it's over. Yeah. Like those are gone. There's no, those cases disappear immediately. That's his first order of business.
But it's now clear that none of those other cases are going to trial there's some people who say it's still theoretically possible for the D.C. Jack Smith election interference case to go through. I simply disagree. I think that is wishful thinking. I do not believe that the Supreme Court has any intention of ruling in such a manner that makes it possible for that case to proceed before the election.
Yeah. The only reason I don't like lose my mind about this stuff is that I always knew the courts wouldn't save us. And like, I remember when I tweeted that after, I can't remember which was the thing. I was just like, guys, we're going to have to beat him at the ballot box. Like the courts aren't going to save us. And people were so mad at me because I think there's just been a real, I don't know if it's certainty or just like deep hope that because of the dynamic we just laid out, because the courts are one of the few places where you can operate sort of straightforwardly, that this would get him, would be the thing that does him in. But, you know, Eileen Cannon just saying,
Aileen. Somebody wrote in and was like, hey, you leave us Eileens alone. And Eileen wrote into us. Like, Eileens are good people. That's Aileen. I said, okay, noted.
Aileen, well, we should learn her name because she's going to be on the Supreme Court when Trump wins. So we should probably know how to pronounce it in any event.
It's going to be great. Clarence Thomas will be replaced by Aileen Cannon. So let's go on to really depressing stuff. This was the week that the Never Trump Coalition blew up.
I'm actually, I think you should explain the geopolitical things that happened to it, but then I feel strongly about this particular crack up here. So please go ahead.
Okay. Well, so this is Biden sits down with Aaron Burnett and kind of makes policy on the fly during the course of an interview where he says,
don't do that. Don't do
bad
it.
Idea. He's going to be withholding 2,000 pound bombs and maybe artillery. Unclear from the way he said it. It was not a detailed thing. If Israel really goes into Rafah, and you know they've already gone into it, but he's like, no, only the outskirts. If they really go in, then he will withhold those things. At which point, a bunch of people lost their minds, and that's where I would like to pass the baton to you.
No, don't pass it yet. So first of all,
what do you want me to do first?
On the actual policy of it all, what is Biden doing here? Is he's trying to put pressure on Netanyahu to just not go into Rafah? Like, explain to me the importance of going into versus not going into Rafah.
Okay, so my position on this is that the Israelis have to go into Rafah. Mm-hmm. And if they don't, then it is tantamount to a strategic victory for Hamas, because it means that Hamas leadership and infrastructure will be able to reform reasonably quickly once the cessation of hostilities is over. If the IDF goes into Rafah and further degrades Hamas, and people are like, well, you can't eliminate every single Hamas person. Well, yeah, sure, right. But you can kill a lot of them, and you can kill the leadership, and you can further destroy the tunnel system, and you can do quite a lot to make Hamas's reformation a slower process than the buildup of whatever parallel governing apparatus the Israelis and the UN and whatever decide to do in the post-war period, right? That's the idea, right? You have two rates of growth.
Yeah, but you also kill a lot of civilians in that prospect, probably, right?
You will kill more innocent civilians than they have. It is very difficult to understand exactly how many civilians have been killed. And I don't think it's really worth trying to say, oh, well, it's only 35,000. It's not, you know, or it's only 25,000. It's not 35,000. Like it is so many that we should all be horrified. Yeah. Like it's an absolute tragedy. However, the rate of the deaths of civilians does seem to have fallen. The IDF does seem to be a learning organization, which has figured out how to carry out these operations more effectively. But that doesn't change the fact, the base fact, the more innocent people will die, and that's bad. That said, the political aim of this war was to eradicate Hamas and make it so that the next iteration of leadership within the Gaza Strip will be able to be better. And so, again, just think of rates of growth, right? You're going to have, once we enter the post-war period, the new governing system or leadership is going to grow at rate X, and Hamas is going to reform at rate Y. And you want rate Y to be much slower. Mm-hmm. So you want to have time for a better governing body to take control. Okay. So this is why I think...
But then talk about Biden. Why is Biden... What is Biden doing right now with this announcement that he'll withhold?
There are three interpretations. There's like an anti-Biden interpretation, a pro-Biden interpretation, and then a median interpretation. The pro-Biden interpretation is like he's just doing what he thinks is right. He is horrified by the civilian casualties. He worries that the use of large ordnance, 2,000-pound bombs, increases the indiscriminate nature of killing, and he's just trying to do the right thing. He doesn't want the U.S. to be party to more mass death. The critical Biden, the position is he has lost his nerve and wants to freeze the conflict where it is. So he doesn't want Netanyahu to go into Rafah at all. And so he is trying to prevent Netanyahu from doing it because he wants the war over now with the conflict frozen where it is, even understanding that probably represents a strategic victory for Hamas. I don't think either of those are true. Or are correct, rather, but who knows? Maybe I'm wrong. My view of this is that Biden is simply playing politics, and that he is trying trying to manage two problems, one of which is the real world problem of the war, and the other of which is the real world problem of being in a race against Donald Trump. Mm-hmm. And he is trying to do something which optically might help him with parts of his own coalition. Now, I don't think it's likely to do that, but I think that is most likely the explanation for why he did this. Okay.
Yeah.
Have I set the table for you in a useful way?
You have. You have. But except that when you say, everybody lost their minds, what you mean is a bunch of people who are nominally in, they're like the anti-antis, let's say, all the way over to some sort of never Trump types, but who would never go so far as supporting Biden, seem to have used this as their break glass moment for why supporting Joe Biden over Trump, or even why supporting Trump, is necessary.
Mm-hmm.
And
I told you this was going to happen.
Well, no, I think that's right. I think this is,
it doesn't matter what this was. At right, some
people
point
were waiting
between
for
November,
an excuse.
There would be something, either Biden would have tripped or said something, or there would be an event somewhere, or there would be a bombing or a crash. There was just going to be some point at which they said, yeah, well, I'm sorry. I'm off the train. I can't do it.
This is a pretty, yeah, but this is so much, this is more important than tripping, right? Like, if you're going to, the idea of I hear this rolling through the upper tier, like the Israel stuff with Biden on sort of the elite tier of folks who are super anti-Trump, but are not Democrats, which I would say is just a pool of people I often move in.
Mm-hmm.
They are beside themselves about this. And so I am unclear how much is sincere versus how much is performative, but on the politics of it with Biden.
Can I add one thing before you do the politics?
Yeah.
The reason this may be sincere, but I think is ultimately misguided, is because the IDF does not need 2,000-pound bombs to carry out its Rafah operation. There's just no indication that these munitions are needed for the Rafah operation. And so that's where I sort of think, come on, guys, let's take a breath here. Because if Biden was cutting off intel, which does not seem to be the case, like the most important thing we're giving them is not weaponry, it's intelligence. Over the last few months, the IDF has become very tightly integrated with CENTCOM. And we have been giving them the crown jewels of intelligence. That seems to be continuing. And that's why I think this is really about optics. It's about Biden saying, you can't have these bombs, when the truth is these bombs are not mission critical.
Which is, I guess the point I would make is that it's all optics then. Like, the critics of Biden, like, Biden uses it as optics, but so does everybody else, right? So people who are critical of Biden, I don't think, this is why I think the politics of it are so bad. And I'm going to just put a pin in, like, the strategic part, or whether or not it's, like, a good idea or bad idea.
I think, but the politics are bad, too. You explain, but I agree with you.
Sour spot, right?
Yes,
the folks who are protesting on college campuses, these And many of them are just like professional protesters, and they're no one's given him credit for this. He's not walking back his critics with this, you know, I'm not going to give them these bombs. That is going to be wildly insufficient.
They've said
he's
abetted a genocide.
Yeah.
And if they mean that, then why would they forgive him for this, right? I mean, if you think he really did a genocide, then him saying he won't give 2,000 bombs is absolutely inconsequential to you.
But even if you assume that the loudest voices say genocide, but that there's like a big swath of people who aren't saying genocide, but are saying like, you got to stop your support of Israel. This isn't stopping support. Like, this is nowhere near sufficient for that crowd.
Yep.
Even like the non-Genocide Joe crowd. And you've now given, I don't think that there was an enormous number of sort of conservatives or center-right folks who were giving Joe Biden a ton of credit for standing with Israel, right? He wasn't getting credit for it.
None. Or maybe grudging, like, well, I guess it could be worse.
But I would
say that's what he would get.
I'm not sure there's a better issue that allows people on the right to feel morally fine saying that Joe Biden is unfit, this is their red line, than an issue like this. Right, like they will feel totally like, you know, I can justify this because this is a big moral hazard on an issue that matters a great deal to me, and therefore I must support Donald Trump. Like the one that I saw that was Cliff Asness on Twitter.
That guy
doing a like. This is pushing me. I'm almost on the Trump train. So he's been a very vocal critic of Trump, but also has always been, and I don't know, I don't want to get too much into criticizing people that I think are basically allies. I know you would, but I
just don't think he's really an ally. That's all.
Well, no, but he supports people who I would put in our ally category. Okay. But there's just that there is a lot of people who they're most comfortable on the right. They don't like the left, but they do see Trump pretty clearly. But like they can't help but look for an excuse to get back on the team. And this gave it to a lot of them, or like they are using it that way. And, you know, I obviously agree with you that like they were going to find something. I just think this is. Maybe, I don't know if I want to say closer to justified, because that's not quite it. But this is one where they will feel closer to having the moral high ground. I don't mean justified, because that puts it on. Yeah. I think from their perspective, they feel justified in this. But Cliff Asness saying, like, might get on the Trump train. And then a whole bunch of people were, like, in the comments being like, welcome to the Trump train, you know, you finally got here. And he's kind of coming back being like, well, I said almost, and close, but you can just see how badly people want to get on side.
Hey again, it's JVL. The conversation goes on from there. If you want to hear the rest of the show, head on over to Bulwark Plus and subscribe. We'd love to have you.
You're great at protecting your own personal information. You probably even use things like two-factor authentication, strong passwords, and a VPN. But as much as you try to be in control of how your information is protected, there are lots of places that also have it, and they might not be as careful as you are. That's why LifeLock monitors millions of data points every second for identity threats. If your identity is stolen, a LifeLock U.S.-based restoration specialist will help solve identity theft issues on your behalf, guaranteed or your money back. Plus, all LifeLock plans are backed by the $1 Million Protection Package, meaning LifeLock will reimburse you up to the limits of your plan if you lose money due to identity theft. You might not be able to control how others handle your personal information, but you can help protect it with LifeLock. Save up to 40% your first year. Call 1-800-LIFELOCK and use promo code IHEART or go to LifeLock.com/iHeart for 40% off. Terms apply.